Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. As strong supporters of the American Kennel Club, we talk about everything from conformation to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between. Your passion is our purpose. Tremendous thanks to our sponsor, Royal Canin. Every day, more top breeders are choosing Royal Canin. Join the winning team. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we have a great guest today. We have Mark Dunn from the American Kennel Club, and Mark is going to give us his full and official title all by himself because it's lots of words, but he's in charge of things like knowing how many dogs are being registered and really talking about that. And he visited with the AKC delegates in December. Is that right, Mark?
Yes.
Right, with some of this information. And now our listeners get to hear it too. So welcome, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So you mentioned my title. It is a little long, but let's see. It's Senior Vice President of Registration and Customer Development. So it does encompass everything registration related with AKC and most of our customer service, which most of the customer service we do out of AKC is registration related. We take about 35,000 phone calls a month, and about 85% of those calls are related to registering a dog, registering a litter, trying to figure out how to do something in the registration area of AKC. So that's a real important part of what we do, and it's what we really focus on.
Huge. And our listeners will remember Mark joined us earlier last fall talking about the explosive detection dog and some of these new programs that have been coming along. So he's a familiar guest to our listeners. So I'm kind of interested, Mark, to hear your topic today because, you know, it was lots of doom and gloom in the American Kennel Club and purebred dogs for a lot of years when we were seeing our registration numbers decline. And now you are bringing me some information that I don't know very many people have heard, and that is that they are back on the upswing.
You're exactly right. For just about 20 years, about two decades, AKC saw declines in registration of individual dogs and AKC litters, and a related decline in the number of people breeding dogs. And, you know, we've lots of discussion over the years about the drivers, and there are definitely legislative and cultural issues going on there. But we have seen over the last 4 years an increase each year in the number of dogs registered. So we've got a 4 years and we're going into our fifth year of increases in dog registrations. Litter registrations, we've got 3 years in a row now under our belt of year-on-year increases. And now the end of 2017 was our second year in a row where the number of people being involved in breeding dogs through AKC is on the increase. So those are all really good indicators for the health of the registry overall and the health of AKC. And it says something about the role that AKC breeders are playing in getting dogs into American homes, which is really important to all of us, to be there for people who love dogs.
Right. Those actually are really good news numbers, Mark. That's the best I've heard on this in quite some time. So talk to us a little bit in terms of, is every breed going up? Only some breeds are going up. What are you seeing sort of as general trends?
There are about 30 breeds that are showing really strong growth. And there are a pretty large group of breeds, 50 or 60 breeds, that are fairly stable. And then there are some breeds that have seen declines. And some of those breeds are breeds that were fairly small in total numbers or total weight of the registry even 8 or 10 years ago. Some of them are new breeds to AKC that have come on in the last 8 or 10 years. But even though they were small relative to, say, Labrador Retrievers, which make up about 15% of the total dogs registered, but when you look at these lower entry breeds, the physical number of dogs, the actual number of dogs, forgetting about everything else, is in sharp decline. So when you're talking about numbers going from the hundreds to the dozens, and there are some breeds we can talk about in particular that have gone down. So what's interesting, if you think about the registry, 2 years in a row, overall AKC grew about 7% each year. We actually grew almost 8% between 2015 and 2016. And then we grew a little bit less between 2016 and 2017. If you compare those 2 years, we grew right at 7%. So there are definitely breeds that pulled that number up. Labrador Retrievers, Sherman Shepherds, Frenchies, there's that whole top 10 list, which I can't reveal the top 10 today. AKC reveals their top 10 in March. There's a big PR blitz they do around the top dogs, but probably everyone listening to this probably know which breeds are most popular based on prior years. But the middle of the pack breeds are pretty much with the average of AKC, but then you've got the bottom 60 breeds that are all in decline or showing significant reduction, especially if you go back to 2008. And one thing I want to say here, Laura, just before we go any further is, and I said this when I met with the Delegates Parent Club Committee in December, and it's not my responsibility and my scope to tell a parent club or the people who are responsible for stewarding a breed what they should care about. Because I'm not a geneticist, I'm not a vet, obviously I'm not breeding those breeds. But I think it is my job to give them the information they need to understand what's going on. You know, I've had great talks with, say, the Dandie Denmont folks, and Dandies are our breed we can talk about specifically, where the delegate for the Dandie Denmont has spent a lot of time thinking about how to grow or increase the number of people breeding the breed and getting involved in the breed and their actual numbers and try to increase the diversity of their breed. But it isn't my job to tell her to do that. It's my job when she or he comes to me and says, we want data, I need to supply it. So I just want to say that up front, that I'm not going to tell anybody what they need to do with their breed. I think the parent clubs, the exhibitors, the judges, the breeders, and the people who love that breed, there's some effort and stewardship is how the future is going to be determined. But whatever help they need, I want to be there for them.
And that's, I think, a great segue, Mark, into our listeners will be familiar. We just recently had the podcast with Joelle and Gregory talking about the Otter Hound Reproductive Bank. And I know you were pretty actively involved in cutting through the historical resistance to something like this from the American Kennel Club and saying, no, let's do this. So I'd love to hear your spin on that, because I think it is so incredibly important for those breeds who are looking for something like that.
The Otter Hounds are a great example of breed that come to AKC even before all this discussion most recently about numbers and the impact of limited registration. The Otter Hounds go back about 3 years at least, started asking for help to find a way to set up a semen bank that could actually be controlled by an entity, you know, not a person, but by a not-for-profit or legal entity that the club would set up. And the key was those dogs had to be able to be involved in litters, even though the semen was owned by an entity and not an individual person. Actually, in almost every situation in AKC registration, we're dealing with individual people who register dogs, not corporations or legal entities, a group of people. So Dr. Gregory spent much time asking for help, and it kind of fell on me to find a way to make it happen. The AKC board said, find a way to do this. So we came up with a pretty simple procedure that we think keeps the parent clubs empowered. So it has to start with the parent club, and a parent club has to reaffirm this every year. So the way it works is if a parent club says, we want to set up a semen bank that can be donated to by individuals that have genetic material that they feel would be useful for other breeders in the breed. AKC is not real prescriptive in exactly how they set up this entity because we didn't want to dictate exactly how to do this, but basically the parent club gets this thing set up and then sends a letter to the AKC board informing the board that they've established this and would like to have registration rights. The board then asks staff to prepare a document for the club to fill out. And the document basically says, this is the name of the entity. They state the name of who is in charge of the entity, and we have whoever is going to sign, whichever human being is going to sign the registration papers. It's called a signatory. We have their signatory, and the current parent club president has to sign that form, authorizing that annually. So every year, we would have to get a new form. And that way, if there's any sort of issues with the club and the Semen Bank entity not being in agreement, say 2 or 3 years down the road, the parent club can always withdraw its approval of that entity, in which case we would no longer be able to process any litters or dog registrations that resulted from those breedings of that semen. So it's a pretty simple process, and it's very empowering of the parent club to where they can keep control of something, because there was a fear that they'd set this thing up and then things change in clubs, different people come and go, and suddenly there's some sort of schism between the semen bank and the club, and we've pretty much eliminated that from happening.
Well, and to take another turn on this, we were talking earlier, you're seeing great improvement in overall numbers, and we then want to know why. What has changed? Is it, and you talked, there are more individual people registering litters. Do you think some of this is coming from the Breeder of Merit, the 100% registration that is required of our Breeders of Merit, or where do you see this coming from?
I think Breeder of Merit is a great place to start when we think about this, because when Breeder of Merit was launched, I think 7 years ago, it was right after I started with AKC. David Roberts and Maribeth O'Neill got that done, and Maribeth still oversees the program. But when they launched the program, the group of breeders that were targeted for Breeder of Merit, meaning people that are very active in the fancy, had produced a number of champions and are members of clubs, that their overall historical rate of registration was about 50%. And keep in mind, the overall for all of AKC is around 40%, meaning if you had a litter of 10 puppies and only 4 of those 10 puppies typically become registered with AKC, and the other 6 end up in pet homes, and for whatever reason, the pet owners often, since they're not going to breed, not going to show, decline to register the dog. So that's kind of a historical problem of AKC. Breeder of Merit, though, since the program started, they went from that 50% number up to close to 80%. I believe the last time we looked at it, we were in the high 70s with Breeders of Merit, which is really tremendous. That group of breeders accounts for about 12% of our total breeders are actually Breeders of Merit, meaning the litters we bred last year, about 12% of those litters came from Breeders of Merit. So when we get that high registration rate on that, it really does drive the overall.
That's a very interesting number. I had not heard the Breeder of Merit number. That's actually very, very good.
Breeders of Merit are, as far as a percentage of our total registry, if you will, if we look at the people that can be Breeders of Merit or are active Breeders of Merit, it's a good 12 to 15% annually of the puppies we produce are produced by those breeders. And then there's another 7 or 8% of people who are in the fancy, they just haven't gotten enough champions, or they aren't currently a member of a club, so we can't even think of them as a potential Breeder of Merit yet, but they may be on track to becoming a Breeder of Merit. So overall, about 23 to 25% of our puppies are produced by people that are either Breeders of Merit or on track to being a Breeder of Merit, which is a good number. I think historically, it's probably a pretty strong number. If you go back, it's harder to tell when we go way back in time because the data was inputted and managed a little bit differently if you go back 15 or 20 years ago. But what I'm told by people that have been around the dog world that long is that the percentage of pet breeders, you know, non-fancier breeders, was significantly higher if you go back 20 years ago when our numbers were super high.
Right. And I think that's probably a pretty accurate assessment. So what other things are you seeing? What other movers on the numbers? There's pressure coming from somewhere to have more purebred dogs bred, more purebred dogs registered. So what other indicators are you looking at?
There's one thing that a lot of people don't think about, and I did touch on this with the delegates at the Parent Club Committee in December, but you've got to think about the overall demand for dogs, which has been growing for a number of years. You know, dog ownership rates have been ticking up very gradually, but population continues to grow. So as population grows, even with a flat percentage of ownership, the demand for more dogs is increasing. And The American Pet Products Association did a survey that they shared with the pet industry last year that said that there were about 90 million dogs in the United States in 2016. And if you think of that, there's 90 million dogs, and if the rate of ownership is not in decline, which it is not, it is flat to increasing. That means if there's 90 million dogs and people are interested in keeping dogs, their interest is not declining, then we know dogs eventually will pass away. And you can use different numbers. I think I've been using 11 years as an average lifespan, but if you say that every year 1/11 of the existing dogs will need to be replaced, that's about 9% of the total. So if you say 9% of 90 million is just over 8 million dogs annually, that would be the demand for dogs in the United States. Well, AKC breeders produced 1.3 million last year. So, and when you think about the total demand for dogs, we are really still only providing a pretty low amount of the total. And the other interesting fact, we have NAIA has done a great job with their shelter studies, and Patty Strand and the entire group has published some great information. But there was another very recent study done by Mississippi State that basically looked at all the shelters in the country. They did a scientific survey, and they came up with a number just north of 3 million. I think it was 3.2 million dogs that are available for adoption. So if you say there's 1.3 million AKC dogs, and let's just assume that Mississippi State's number is right, maybe we'll bump it up a little bit to 3.8 million, right? So now we've got about 5 million dogs. There's still a lot of dogs that need to come from somewhere. And of course, there's UKC litters and there's purebreds that are not AKC registrable, but there is still a lot of room for growth for AKC breeders and responsible breeders that are willing to do what we expect breeders to do to breed AKC dogs. So I think we have a great opportunity if we can find ways to grow responsibly and to do the right thing for dogs and for the people who love them.
Right. And I think that you and I talked actually a little bit in Orlando, and I think one of the things that is the most interesting to me of all of this with the low number breeds, going back to that, a lot of times they're low numbers because they don't have homes for them. So it becomes this chicken and the egg thing. Like, you build the demand for otter hounds or dandy denmonts, you have to be able to supply the demand from well-bred AKC registered puppies. So that to me is such a difficult balancing act and the fulcrum on that. What are your thoughts on that?
One of the delegates asked that at the Parent Club committee, asked if AKC could help market a breed to make a breed more in demand. And you hit the nail on the head. There are things that can be done to inspire demand or to drive demand, but you still come back to the basic math of how many people are breeding AKC Dandy Denmonts or Skye Terriers or Harriers or Otter Hounds versus how many are in demand. And how does the Parent Club and the current breeders who are passionate about that breed, how do they responsibly bring in new people and mentor new people? And I think that's where the conversation really has to go within the Parent Clubs, is how do they mentor new people to get involved in their breed? And what can the AKC, the larger AKC, do either in confirmation shows or other activities that we can do to help make that happen? Or on the registry side, what can AKC do to create the right incentives? Simply marketing isn't the answer. And I think what I said in response to that question, I said the worst thing we could do is go out and make a hard-to-find breed more popular, because I know exactly where that ends up. If everybody's walking into the pet store looking for a Skye Terrier and they can't find one, then the pet store is going to make some phone calls and somebody's going to get the idea they should go and acquire one. And if we simply try to market our way to success for particular breeds, we can create a real problem. Because if we drive demand for a hard-to-find breed, someone is going to go try to fulfill that demand. And unfortunately, it might not be the Parent Club breeders. It might not be people that are showing dogs and people that are most concerned about the proper stewardship of that less common breed or even rare breed. So I would hate to see a time come where we have a very rare breed and we do things to make the interest in that breed go up, but the club isn't ready and the breeders aren't there. The breeders haven't been mentored. The next generation of breeders haven't been created in that breed. So it has to be a partnership between the American Kennel Club and the people really responsible for stewarding their breed to find the right path. And my role in that, just to remind you, Laura, and everybody listening, is as far as the registry is concerned, is to find ways to share data to help empower them. And then, like we talked about earlier with the otter hounds, to find changes in policies or procedures that stay within the spirit of AKC's rules and regulations, but will empower parent clubs to steward their breeds in a way that they think will be impactful.
And I think there's so much meat here, Mark, in terms of what we can talk about for our preservation breeders. Start brainstorming in your parent clubs, in your national clubs, even in your local clubs, talking about how can we create the, for lack of a better term, infrastructure to support improving genetically diverse numbers within these endangered breeds, and then be able to bring in the homes that are going to be excited to own one of these special dogs.
Well, one of the keys is to start with data, right? So if you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering how the Belgian sheepdogs are doing because you're a Belgian sheepdog breeder and you hadn't really heard that the numbers are up or down or diversity is improving or declining, every delegate and every parent club president, delegate, and recording secretary received some data, and they were told they can share the data however they see fit. So if you're a member of a parent club, you may be seeing it published soon in one of your newsletters, but you could also contact the president of the club or your delegate and see if they could share with you the numbers so you could see, compared to the overall AKC, how does your breed look in terms of the percentage of dogs being produced that go on to participate in confirmation, the percentage of dogs being produced that go on to become breeders, and then are those numbers increasing or decreasing? You already have small breeds, and someone like Dr. Jerry Bell may have already given a lecture to your parent club about the importance of diversity. And then you look at what's happening with decline in the number of dogs actually being shown in confirmation and an even smaller number actually being bred, that you can see the concern that some people have could be valid in your breed.
Do we have corresponding information on event entries? Are event entries up, confirmation, performance events, any of those? Do we have that kind of information also?
In the numbers that we shared with each club, we included what was happening with both dogs and bitches in confirmation, so the actual number of dogs and bitches in confirmation, and then the total, of course, added together, and the percent of dogs in confirmation. So that percentage across the board is basically saying, of the dogs we produce, how many went on to compete? And then we've got the same numbers of bitches bred, dogs bred, and the total bred, and the percent bred of those dogs that were born. So if we look at German wirehair pointers, in 2008, there were 314 litters produced, and those litters produced 2,300 puppies, which is a really nice number. That's like 7.4 puppies per litter. Of those puppies, about 50% were registered, which is a nice number. About half of them were registered. And only 42 were registered with limited registration, which is also a pretty good number. That's less than 4% of the dogs were registered with limited. And if we go a little further, we can see of those 2,300 dogs that were registered in 2008, 5% went on to compete in confirmation, and 10% went on to breed. Now, if we skip forward to 2014, because if we go too far, we'll run into other reasons why dogs are not breeding or competing. But the overall number is down a little bit. We're down from 314 litters down to 267. So there is a decline there. But I can tell you by 2016, that number came back up to 330. So wire-haired are following the overall AKC trend of declining through about 2013 and then starting to increase thereafter. And if we scroll down, we can see of the dogs that were registered as puppies in 2014, 6% have gone on to compete at this point. So actually, that's a little bit higher than the rate in 2008. And 7% have now bred. Now, I don't know, Laura, that's your breed. I don't know how long fanciers typically wait in wire hairs to breed, but that's not much of a drop from 10% to 7%. And there may be some dogs that just, or bitches that have not bred at this point.
for sure dogs that I would expect that would continue on from there.
When we look at your breed, the German Wirehead Pointer, that it seems to be following the overall AKC trends, and from a participating confirmation and participating in breeding, seems to be relatively stable compared to some other breeds.
Yeah, that was what I expected, so I was just curious. I figured they'd be a good bellwether. So again, and I'll give you the opportunity to opt out here, so say so if you want to, but again, are we able to identify across AKC numbers of entries in all competitive events? Is that not a number that we've been tracking?
You know, I don't have it in front of me, Laura. It would be a great talk with Doug about what's going on with confirmation and agility. You know, roughly, I could tell you, agility grew tremendously over a 15-year period. Started to flatten out more recently, so we're not getting the same kind of year-on-year growth in agility. And confirmation entries also have been up and down over the last few years. I think that they're concerned that we do need to find a way to continue to grow confirmation. So I'm not directly involved in overseeing events, but obviously I work closely with Doug and his team, and all of us here are concerned about increasing the number of people involved in the sport, and that means breeding and showing. And we know that historically only a sliver of AKC breeders participated in confirmation at a high level. And right now, like I said earlier, it's in the 20% range. But it is important that people continue to matriculate into that. And if I could go back to a question you asked me really early on, and I think I answered half of it and didn't finish. You said, what other trends are we seeing in the type of breeder? So what we saw last year was that we saw a lot of growth in the number of people breeding that are not currently considered either commercial by any definition, meaning they only bred one litter with AKC, so they're very low volume, maybe one or two litters tops, but they're not currently on track to be a breeder of merit. So they either have not finished dogs or they are not competing in confirmation to any large extent. Now, half of those breeders are very new. They're either new as in last year was the first time they showed up on our radar, or they're new because they've shown up once or twice in the last two or three years. The real key is to bring those people in, to bring them along. And the way we do that is through education. You know, we have Canine College. We have 12 breeder courses up in Canine College. And then the work that local clubs can do to basically throw a wide net and encourage people in the community to come to dog shows and to participate in something, you know, anything, so that they start to get an idea of who their local clubs are and who the AKC is and what we can do to help them develop this passion, develop this thing that they did, maybe the hobby or something they did without perhaps as much thought as we would all like, but they did it. Let's figure out a way to bring them in and have them be more involved and more influenced by the breed mentors, by club mentors, and by whatever means AKC proper can do through education and development.
Absolutely. Okay, well, Mark, thank you so very, very much for bringing us this information. I think this is really important for people to hear because as sort of human beings, we tend to focus on our cup half empty instead of our cup half full. So thank you very much for bringing out and putting into the light some positive information here.
Oh, no, thank you for the opportunity. It's been a great pleasure.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk, brought to you by the Aramedia Group, publisher of ShowSite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.